And so it gives me great pleasure to welcome to this convention our Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Johanns.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you for that very warm welcome. Jim, thanks for that very kind introduction. I appreciate that immensely. That reference to my past political life kind of reminded me of a story. The story goes like this. There were three politicians, and they were at a forum and just taking questions from the audience. And this one gentleman got up and he said, "You know, I want to get right down to brass tacks with my question." He said, "Imagine yourself, you've died and you're laid out in your casket and people are walking by you. What do you want them to say about you when they're looking down at you in the casket?" And the first politician said, "You know, boy, that's quite a question." He said, "I guess what I'd want people to say is that I was an honest guy." And the next politician said, "Yeah, that's a great question." He said, "Thinking about it, I guess what I'd like to have people say about me is that I worked hard." And the third politician said, "You know, I've had a little more time to think about it than the others, and I guess if people were walking by me and I was laid out there in my casket, I hope that somebody says, 'I think he's still moving.'" I've been on the job a year and I'm still moving. It's good to be back here. Congratulations. I don't know if a lot has been made of this, but this is your 10th anniversary of the merger of the National Cattlemen's Association and the National Livestock and Meat Board. That was the birth of the NCBA as we know it today. I want you to know how much we appreciate your good work on behalf of a great industry, America's cattle industry. The demand for beef continues to be very strong. That's so encouraging. To quote Cattle Facts, fourth quarter 2005 prices were higher than maybe what some anticipated. That's testament, I believe, to the unwavering consumer confidence in the safety of American beef. I also want to take a moment as I start out here this morning and salute your tremendous staff. They do a great job for you. I want you to know that. They work tirelessly to represent and promote the strongest and the best beef industry in the world. I have worked with Jim this year, and I want you to know how much I appreciate his leadership. He's a great guy, real straightforward guy, and I always appreciated the opportunity to talk to him about the industry and what we were doing at the USDA. And of course, it's a pleasure to welcome someone new to the post also, incoming President Mike John. I congratulate you. We look forward to working with Mike and the team as this year unfolds. As you know, many of you know, this event is something of an anniversary for me. When I joined you in Texas last year, this was the first speech outside of Washington after joining the President's team, after becoming the Secretary of Agriculture. At that time, it had been about a year since 64% of the beef market had slammed shut. And I promised you then during that meeting that I would do everything I could to keep pushing to bring trade back to normal levels. And together, I might emphasize together, we've been pushing hard to restore access to markets that closed a couple of years ago. And we have accomplished a great deal. Hong Kong, Singapore, South Korea, Taiwan have resumed trade in various beef products. And I was pleased to announce yesterday that Mexico took an additional step. They opened their market to bone-in beef. A testament to the safety of U.S. beef and confidence in the safeguards against BSE. The world is showing confidence in the safety and the quality of our beef products. And I promise you that USDA will work to keep that confidence in the safety of our product, in our scrupulous attention to our agreements that we have with various customers around the world. Now, I'd be less than honest with you if I failed to acknowledge the temporary setback with Japan. The failure to meet the terms of an export verification program with Japan, well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that's unacceptable. So we are investigating the situation to determine what happened. We want to be able to explain that, and we also want to set the course of action to make sure that that doesn't happen again. Along with other measures, I've announced 12 steps to strengthen our system and assure compliance. Your organization stepped up immediately and applauded that effort. I appreciate that. And I'll also share with you that it's very possible that after the investigation, we may identify some additional things that we want to do. And of course, we'll be very transparent in talking about that in releasing the results of our effort. I've also spent a great deal of time on discussions with my counterpart in Japan, and we've had lengthy discussions with Japanese officials. I will tell you that in terms of our effort here, we don't intend to sacrifice thoroughness for speed in our investigation. We'll move as rapidly as we can, but when we're done, we want to be able to say it was thorough. I have assured Japan and all of our trading partners that this really is a no-holds-barred look at the situation. It's going to be deliberate in pace, and it's going to be comprehensive in scope. But I want to emphasize something that I've emphasized over and over again, both as a consumer and as your secretary, and that is that American beef is absolutely safe. We worked very, very hard, not only with you, but with scientists and with others, to put interlocking safeguards in place. Our interlocking safeguards protect consumers. Americans understand this. Consumption continues to be so strong. Many of our trading partners recognize this, and we're going to do everything we can with you in partnership, working hard to show Japanese consumers what we mean. Not only is American beef safe, I can also report to you with a tremendous body of information to back this up that our herd is healthy. The largest BSE surveillance effort ever undertaken in the United States is proving that fact. Thanks in large part to an extraordinary government-industry partnership, and I might add an investment of about $1 million each and every week since the program began, this effort has been very informative. On average, we tested 1,000 high-risk cattle per day for BSE, 1,000. Only one in more than 600 animals tested came up with a positive. Yesterday, USDA's Office of the Inspector General released its review of our BSE enhanced surveillance program. I want to be clear that this is not related to the situation in Japan. The report is the product of an investigation that began working with the USDA now nearly 2 years ago. Given the magnitude of the report, we are very pleased to report to you today that it reflects what we describe as a clean audit. In other words, we reached agreement with the Inspector General's recommendations. The fact is that the OIG report concludes that there's no evidence that specified risk materials entered the food supply ever. Our safeguards have worked. Our agencies with responsibilities in this area, APHIS and FSIS, have already acted on many of the recommendations in the report, and I will share with you that that work continues. The Inspector General did recommend that we improve documentation and tracking of the work being done. And not only do we agree, we have already done so. The report also recommends that we proceed with due caution in drawing conclusions based upon the enhanced surveillance efforts and ensure that our conclusions are not overstated. And of course, we could not agree more. We always want our conclusions to be accurate and based upon science. Now, let me, if I might, talk about some other issues that we face. And I failed to mention this at the beginning, but when my comments are done, I'll be happy to take questions from you. While BSE has been a concern to our trading partners, it is not, as the NCBA itself reports, the only trade barrier that affects U.S. cattlemen. Ambassador Rob Portman and I have just returned from the World Economic Summit in Davos, Switzerland, where ministers continued to push for a successful conclusion to the Doha round this year. I am pleased to tell you that there was progress, there's consensus, but there still is a lot of work to be done. Now, our goal in these negotiations, ladies and gentlemen, for America's farmers and ranchers was well put by Jim McAdams. I'm quoting Jim here. He says, "We believe in the WTO negotiations because we envision a future where high-quality U.S. beef exports are not discouraged and punished by unreasonable trade barriers." I can say to Jim that the president shares his vision. Quoting from the president now in the State of the Union message, "With open markets and a level playing field, no one can outproduce or outcompete the American worker. Americans should not fear our economic future because we intend to shape it." Ladies and gentlemen, our ranchers and our farmers are indeed shaping the future. This year, I will tell you that we are forecasting the third year in a row of record agricultural exports, $64.5 billion. That is up 25% from the year 2000. It's a remarkable track record. Now, we hear the debate about trade, but let me share some statistics with you. Our producers know that 27% of our agricultural income comes from export markets. 27%. I will also share with you that 5% of the world's population lives here in the United States. And I'll state that the other way. That means that 95%, the rest of the world, our customers and our potential customers live outside of the United States. Our job is to make sure that we have fair access to those markets where they live. As the president said, this country can compete with anybody, anytime, anywhere. And if we can't, we ought to figure out what we need to do differently. Competition, we all recognize, is good. It challenges us to be better, but it has to be fair competition. In the spirit of the president's vision for the future of American competitiveness, everyone knows in this room that if U.S. agriculture is to thrive in this century, we must develop foreign and domestic markets for a great productivity. That is why this administration is committed to accomplishing free and open trade based upon scientifically sound and internationally recognized markets. Thank you. But you know what? We're going to build on your strength. We're determined to build on the strength and the momentum of your industry, the cattle industry. This is an enormous show of strength that you display Amid challenges in trade, you continue to argue for a level playing field, for the opportunity to market your products worldwide. You truly are leaders in this area. And it's not that the industry hasn't been challenged. From hurricanes in the south to drought in the northern Rockies and northern high plains, massive grass fires in Oklahoma and Texas, one of the biggest fires in history, I might add, the industry has remained strong. Your assistance during the hurricanes was not only appreciated, it was unbelievable. It was great. USDA continues to do all we can to help also. We continue to do all we can to deliver all possible assistance to farmers and ranchers to help them reclaim their businesses and their lives. Last week in the hurricane areas, we announced $2.8 billion in aid for hurricane victims. Of this, $1.2 billion will go to livestock and crop producers through programs like the new Livestock Indemnity Program and Feed and Indemnity Program. We want to get payments to producers for the loss of dead stock and protect livestock that did survive, to assist with buying feed in areas where feed was destroyed. We're giving producers $200 million in assistance through the Emergency Conservation Program and $300 million through the Emergency Watershed Program Protection Program. We want to help producers get their fences back up, remove debris, repair conservation structures, and get their lives and their livelihoods back in order. Keep in mind that all of this is in addition to our ongoing efforts. Earlier this week, we announced the Conservation Security Program sign up for February 13 through March 31. We heard what you told us during our Farm Bill listening sessions last year, and improvements were made for rangeland requirements to reward the best stewards of working ranches. We're also proud of our partnerships this year on work that advances the industry. By the way, if you do have any questions about our programs, please stop by our NRCS and FSA booths. The FSA booth, by the way, is 20 feet long to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Conservation Reserve Program. That program is something we can all be proud of. Now, let me offer, if I might, a few concluding thoughts, and then, as I indicated, I'd be very pleased to take your questions. Let me conclude by talking about an issue that is important to all of you, an issue about which there are many questions. I suspect questions will continue. The issue of the National Identification System. I'd like to answer some of the questions that we have heard are being asked. First, though, I would like to commend the NCBA members for showing tremendous leadership in the industry-led animal ID effort. The new U.S. Animal Identification Organization has presented its database to us. That represents real progress. Now, we feel, as you do, that the ID system must be grounded in partnership. Our long-standing goals remain to move forward quickly without causing unnecessary burden on producers and without unduly increasing the size of government. We believe that the system that we have been talking about, the metadata system, would get this job done. Which brings me to the questions that we have heard. Now, some have asked whether this system is a retreat from our position that private databases should contain the animal movement data. Let me assure you that I'm not changing course. Some time ago, we proposed a system that would require all data to be held in a private database. The widespread support for privately owned data was dampened by concerns among states and industry about sharing a single database. And we worried about gridlock Brad Aphis did not throw in the towel. Instead, our staff went back and we started to work to determine how we could move forward in a way that addressed the concern. Aphis came back with this proposal as a means to allow for multiple private databases that could own the data while providing USDA with the portal that we will need at times to access information. Under this proposal, you, the industry, would continue to own and have control over the animal movement data. But through agreements established between private entities and the USDA, we would be able to access those pieces of information that are necessary in the event that we would need to do something like complete an investigation. Organizations that wish to consolidate their tracking data can still do so, and in fact are encouraged to do so. But this system provides the flexibility that so many have requested, and I might add, allows for a robust private sector. But we've also been asked whether this system will slow the pace at which we enter into agreements with the private sector to access their information. The system will not slow that pace because it does not need to be operational before we enter into the agreements. Now, the first step is to develop criteria for the agreements. We're working on that. Our goal is to soon have the first draft of that criteria posted, and we're going to invite your comment. Once we finalize the criteria, we will move forward with agreements at the same time that we are implementing the system. Some have asked how much money we have dedicated to animal ID since this was kicked off. And today I can report to you that nearly $100 million in funding and resources have been dedicated to this effort. More than two-thirds of that has come from the USDA. I can also tell you that our commitment to the effort continues. I will not preview the President's budget. It's his budget, and he'll release it next week. But that funding information will be available on Monday. Much of what has been spent has gone out to states under cooperative agreements to implement their own animal identification system. We believe that money has been well spent. The industry and states have learned and provided USDA with information about what works, what doesn't work. Finally, some simply want to know why we are putting so much effort into animal ID. It's a subject that brings debate. It would be a crucial tool in safeguarding the health of animals, agricultural animals, from disease. One only need look, though, to other parts of the world. One need only look to Australia and other countries to understand another reason why it's important, and I think you understand this. My friends, they are aggressively marketing their animal traceability to gain whatever competitive advantage that they can gain. Now, I know this industry understands the importance of exports. A national animal identification system is needed to protect this crucial source of income and to protect your future. I hope that helps to clear some of the questions that maybe have circulated through this conference. With NCBA's continued leadership on this issue and our partnership with other groups, we believe that this has every opportunity to be a win-win situation for the industry and for the American consumer. Final thoughts. The history of the cattle industry is the story of America. It's a proud heritage that threshed and harvested and ranched the land in this nation to agricultural greatness. The state of our beef industry is strong, like the state of our union. The President is as committed as ever, and I am, to ensuring that this industry remains vibrant. that agriculture remains a cornerstone of the U.S. economy. It's been a pleasure to meet with you, and I look forward to a continuing partnership in the year ahead, a partnership to expand trade, a partnership to build global confidence in a product that we know is the safest in the world. Thank you very much. God bless you.